We're going to discuss some of the approaches that we find, maybe in very much in our time, about how the poskim address questions of halacha when it comes to COVID, but not necessarily only about COVID. It happens to be many of the questions that come up are really all year, every year sort of questions, but just come up, and the question is, how much do we deviate? How much is allowed to slide? How much do we change from the standard halacha psak when we're a little bit under pressure? That's the real question we're going to try to address. I'm going to show different approaches of the different poskim, and I really want to bring out some like principles of halacha that we're going to think about. Okay? So first, I want to ask, how far do you think we should take a shad hadassah? If someone's under pressure, it's a really difficult situation. Imagine, let's say the standard question I'm sure everybody's heard about. Before Pesach, there are many people, unfortunately, who were isolated for Pesach. They couldn't go home because there was an older person. They couldn't go anywhere. They had to stay in isolation. So for Pesach, they were all by themselves for safety. Question is, were you? Is it allowed, or was it allowed to do a video, a phone, Seder with that person, including them? Question really somewhat pivoted on how usher is it, and what do we let slide when we're coming to Shad HaDchak? So what do we think on that question? What would you say if someone asked you? We're going to have Rosh Hashanah soon. Someone who can't leave their house. Are we allowed to do the shofar via Zoom?
I don't think so.
So why not?
Because if we say we're not allowed to say respond, let's say amen for a kaddish or something like that, that's what where I'm going at. Like you cannot do minyan by. It's not like being in the place. I don't know.
Okay. So it doesn't get us there. Fine. What if he says, I just want to listen to the piyutim of Yom Kippur because I really like to. I enjoy listening to the piyutim. Not all sardim do like Netana Tokef, okay? I think some of this is sardim have that. But okay, you want to hear Oked V'Hane Akad. You want to hear Achol Ketana. Someone's going to go Rosh Hashanah and Kippur and not hear them? What if they say, I really just want to listen on the phone? What do you say about that? Not to be Yotzei. But just because it makes me feel good to be involved with the minyan.
If you're not yourself, why would you be doing it? That's the thing.
He, let's say he feels good. He wants to hear the piyut, okay, Van Akkad. So
We
should
don't
he
do things
say,
to feel good, that's it.
right?
Right.
Should we say somewhat, basically the question would somewhat boil down to a little bit. Could you say, Bishad HaBechak, under pressure, we could rely on an individual opinion. Kedai who, whatever we'll say here, Yerushalmi Zalman or Bach, Kedai who, somebody, L'smuch Halav B'Shat. We can rely on the individual opinion when it's a pressure situation. Grandpa, Rabbi Hanan, what do you say? Oh, okay. Well, anybody want to add opinions, you could. Feel free. So that's the question I want to discuss. How far do we let things go when it's a Shad Dachak? Which things we're allowed to push, which ones not? Specifically,
okay.
I came to the
So the
Zoom
ones
thing.
who pushed on the Zoom for a Seder, they were going to put the Zoom on before Yantif started. But actually, on Rosh Hashanah or on Yom Kippur, it's much, much more strict, and you can't
Okay.
just do things on Zoom.
What I meant is, let's say you set it up from before, but yes. There's a big difference between setting it up on and setting up before. Very good point. So let's say you set it up before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur. Could that work? Now that because, okay, I'll set up that question, and then I want to sort of dive into the main thing, the main topic that we're going to sort of think about. So let's say we're going to discuss. I'm going to show my PowerPoint now. Share my screen. Three approaches from the poskim. Okay? One of them is, I'm going to present. The first one is someone that we might have heard of. If not, I want to introduce him tonight, one of three people. We're going to discuss halacha is from Rabbi Zilberstein, from Rav Asher Weiss, and from Rabbi Herschel Schachter. Okay, so we're going to discuss all of them. I'm going to give a little background on them, a little bit of the story, and then the fascinating questions that came up in hundreds of questions that happened over the last few months, and their general approach and style. So Rabbi Zilberstein, he has some popular books that people may have heard of, halacha questions on the Parsha Harevna, or Aleinu L'Shabech, Hashukei Chemed, is a fun questions on Gemara, and many other things. And he's very much a Haredi from Bnei Brak, although he has some other background in his life, but his style is more or less similar to those Rabbanim from Bnei Brak. He comes from Poland, 1930s. His parents got out before the Holocaust. When he was a little kid, he lived in Yerushalayim. He learned in Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, that's where Shlomo Zalman Orbach learned. Many gedolim learned over there by Arya Levine, who was the mashgiach there. We'll mention his name in a moment. Arya Levine is such a tremendous tzaddik. He was called the tzaddik of our times. The book about him is written, a tzaddik in our times. He has so many wonderful stories. Talking about Magefa, plagues. So about Arya Levine, it said, it's in the book, part of it's a biography. He used to visit lepers, people had leprosy, and they were in confinement, they were in isolation, and they had nobody, no rabbi, nobody coming to visit them for long periods of time. And he was the rabbi that would come to visit them on Shabbat every single week, and try to do Kriya Torah for them, try to do mitzvah for them, try to encourage them, and there are wonderful like miracle stories that it's written about him. One time that he was, when there was a lockdown, a shutdown from the British government before the War of Independence, before 1948, where they said no Jews are allowed walking around at night. Oh, sorry, not walking around in the streets at all. And he once, but he felt bad for all the lepers, and he also used to go visit the Jews that were in jail every single week. And one time when he was in the street, he was going to be caught by a British soldier who was going to throw him in jail because he wasn't allowed to be outside under the British mandate before the War of Independence in 48. So what happened was, apparently this is where the story goes, is he took a paper out of his pocket. It had nothing on it. But he had, before he went, he had a dream. They should take a certain paper in his pocket. He took the paper with his pocket and he gave it to the British soldier. And the British soldier says, "Oh, I see you're very, you have a pass from someone very, very important. I'm going to let you go through this time." So he takes it, and he looks at the paper. He was wondering to see what happened. The paper was empty. He must be that, you know, some nace happened. And he gets to the leper colony, and he does something, and makes a minyan for them, and he gives them some words of encouragement, and a similar story on his way back. But there's numerous stories and stories about Rav Arya Levine, such a tremendous tzaddik in his time, because he would go out of his way for people that had very little and had no one else to take care of them. Though the leprosy was not as contagious and as dangerous as corona, so it's not a halachic story, but it's a meaningful story. So back to the Rav Zilberstein. I want to show just now a little bit back to when I showed this Masorah tree the other day. Rav Arya Levine was a student in Volozhin. He learned in Volozhin, Rav Arya Levine, and the same tzaddik in Yerushalayim, Rav Arya Levine, and Rav Chaim Volozhin, the Talmud of the Gra, who goes back generations to the Ramah, to Rashi. Anyway, so he was learning in Volozhin in the beginning, in the middle of 1800s, and one of their things in Yiddish they had was Estenteg. Estenteg is, they used to eat meals by people who would host them. So they'd go for meals to people who, you know, eat around at different people's tables. So you eat lunch every Wednesday at this person's house, and a Thursday every night you'd eat at this person's house, and so on and so forth. However, it happened that he felt that a certain, he knew that this person that he used to eat dinner with very often, he used to be nice that he would invite him for dinner, he used to try to convince him. He said, "You're such a brilliant scholar, you should go to college. You shouldn't be learning secular studies. You become a lawyer, a mathematician, a scientist, a doctor, what are you doing, an engineer? Why are you going to learn all your life? And he tried encouraging him. So Ari Levine didn't take to that, and he wasn't interested, and he felt bothered every time he went to this person's house. So he decided to stop going. So he used to fast, I think the book says it, twice a week for a long time. And eventually, he decided to leave the Lajan basically because of this issue. And he never said to the Rosh Yeshiva why. And the Rosh Yeshiva at the time was Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, just to say. Years and years later, Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer moved to Yerushalayim, and very soon after, he came in the middle of the night and knocked on Rabbi Levine's door and said, I finally heard this story about why you left the Lajan, because you didn't want to say Lashon Hara about the people that hosted you, and you didn't feel comfortable. So I just wanted to ask Machila. So I said, what do you mean ask Machila? You were the Rosh Yeshiva. You weren't. He said, I should have asked you about how everything was going. I should have been more on top of things. Anyway, back to Rav Aryeh Levine. So Rav Aryeh Levine, a very, very holy person, he had a daughter, a very special woman that became the Rebbetzin of Rav Eliyashiv. That was Rav Aryeh Levine. Rav Aryeh Levine also ran the Yeshiva Kol Torah. And we'll get back to Rav Eliyashiv in a moment. Rav Eliyashiv, though, was the Gedol Hador for many years in Israel, ran away from fame, but with, let's say, Chacham Avadya for Sardim, he was a contemporary, and he discussed many questions together. They agreed on many things. They sat on the Beis Din with Rav Herzog together on many occasions. That's Rav Eliyashiv. So anyway, Rav Eliyashiv's wife was this daughter of Rav Aryeh Levine. But anyway, Rav Aryeh Levine ran a yeshiva, and in this yeshiva, Kol Torah, they had Rav Zilberstein. We'll get back to Rav Zilberstein, because Rav Zilberstein is married into the Eliyashiv family. His wife is Rav Eliyashiv's daughter. So, basically, full circle, he's the student of Rav Aryeh Levine, but he's also married into the family. Anyway, another very, just while we're here, very famous, and he's going to be relevant to the questions and answers that Rav Zilberstein very often gives, a brother-in-law of Rav Zilberstein is Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is alive and well, he should continue to live. And let's say the Sima Shas, he came on for a few minutes and they had a tremendous scene. Every single year, he learns all of Talmud Bavli, Yerushalmi, Rambam, Zohar, Tosefta, Shulchan Aruch, and I think more. But he does that in a few hours every single day. He calls them the Chobos, he does. So for most people, doing 8 daf a day and Yerushalmi 5 daf is a little bit over their heads, but that's Rav Chaim Kanievsky's standard learning. And he's into, I think, his 90s. He is also a son-in-law of Rav Eliyashiv and a brother-in-law of Rav Zilberstein. He's the son of the Stipler, and the Stipler, one of the Gaonim, also in Bnei Brak, and he learned from the Alter Navardik and came back also again from Volozhin. Okay. Also, Rav Chaim Kanievsky is his wife is from Rav Eliyashiv, but his mother, his father is the Stipler, his mother was the sister of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish had no children, sadly enough, but the Chazon Ish's sister was Chaim Kanievsky. Nissen Karelitz is also from another sister of the Chazon Ish and a nephew of the Chazon Ish. Okay? Nissen Karelitz was Nifter only months ago. Okay? So, back to Rav Zilberstein. So, Rav Zilberstein's style, if anybody's ever read any of his things or heard of him, is very, very fun. He doesn't just get questions and answer like bottom line. If anybody writes like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, it's one word answer. Yes, no, maybe. End of story. Rav Zilberstein always has a fun way of saying things. He always has a cute raya. His stuff is very sweet to read. It's not at all as rigorous or intense like Rav Avadya Tshuvas or Rav Moshe Tshuvas. You have to like break your head and like work on them. They're very much like a walk in the park, a piece of cake. So I'll show you some of them. But they're always infused with questions. They're always infused with things he heard from Rav Eliyashiv and Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they always have fun stories in them. Things you'd never ever think would happen. Okay, so back to Rav Zilberstein. Okay, he married Rav Eliyashiv's daughter. He lived in Switzerland. That's why. He has good publicity. Very good. And he went to Israel. He lives now near Bnei Brak. Very good. And so. Hashuke Chemed is one of his books, and he put out stuff on Corona, three pamphlets about 100 pages, more than 100 pages collectively, like 100, I don't know, 100 or 200 pages collectively. And he discusses at length, for example, like what segulas, what good things are there to do to avoid corona? And he's very into segulas, and he wants to help people find out what's a good segula. So one day he asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, what's a segula to avoid corona? So he said, oh, you should learn Izu Neshech. It's one of the sections in Gemara. So he asked him, you know, why Izu Neshech? Oh, because it's a hard one. And it's difficult like Sarai, okay? Reb Chaim Kanievsky, but he trusts everything Reb Chaim Kanievsky said. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is one of the Gedolim. But that's something that you won't find in other tshuvas. That's just not something that they deal with. And then a different day, he says, I asked him what he should learn, and he said, oh, we should learn brachos. So I said, wait a minute, but you told me last week people should start learning Izu Neshech. So he said, oh, last week it was really bad. There were a lot of people catching corona. This week it got a little better. So that's why I told you that you should learn brachos. Because to make 100 brachos a day, it saves you from a plague, like David HaMelech instituted. Anyway, it's like part of his style is to involve lots of stories, lots of quotes from lots of people. Anyway, he says a story, though, in when he's talking about the segulas. He says, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he said, learn, learn, learn. Now, I am not at all talking about, if anybody ever heard anything about Reb Chaim Kanievsky in the last few months, I'm just going to say it just so you've heard of it, but it's unfortunately negative publicity, because he didn't get the right information. It's not his fault to some degree, but what happened is he told the yeshivas in the Bnei Brak to continue to learn even after the Israeli government said it wasn't safe. Because he said the most important thing for us to do is to learn Torah. And the problem was he didn't really have that much contact with doctors. And so eventually, his brother-in-law, Rav Zilberstein, one of the people, it said in the articles, anybody read them, Rav Zilberstein was one of the people, and Rav Zilberstein gets shalos from, he's one of the rabbeim on the Lineato Hospital in Bnei Brak. He answers medical shalos. He has a few svarim specifically about medicine. He's not a doctor, he never went to college, but he knows a lot about medicine. So Rabbi Zilberstein spoke to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and he was involved in closing the yeshivas. But Reb Chaim Kanievsky, it's just not, medicine was not his, is not his field, and he was misinformed about what the metzias was. Anyway, so he says a story that a doctor went to go visit a house call to the mother-in-law of the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich. Panovich is the main yeshiva, Bnei Brak. The Rosh Yeshiva there is Rabbi Edelstein. Edelstein, a big tzaddik, and he was staying with his wife and his kids. I don't know, he's not young, by his in-laws to take care of his in-laws that were very old. So they were taking care of them, and the doctor was afraid that the mother-in-law was very sick, so the doctor came and made a house call to see if they could do anything for this mother-in-law. And lo and behold, what he noticed, this rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva, Apanovich, was giving shir on the phone to people, and he didn't have any tables because the mother-in-law was on a ventilator, and there was medicine. Everything was scattered all over the house and on the tables. It was a small house, and he said there was no room on the table to put down a sefer. So he took out a few folding chairs, and he made a beis medrash with folding chairs, and put all his sarim on the chairs, and he was standing around on the phone giving a shir. So the doctor was impressed. You see, in Panovich, in Bnei Brak, corona didn't stop the learning Torah. Anyway, Rav Zilberstein quotes that in his tshuvas to encourage everybody to try to keep learning with the best of our abilities. Now, getting to some shailas. Here's the fun shaila. Well, tell me what you think. A boy that's supposed to get married 2 days before his wedding caught corona. Tested positive. And they already booked the hall. And they want to know, are they allowed to do the wedding? And really, the kala, the fiancé, is not really supposed to be in contact with him. So maybe they can't even do a yichun room. Forget they can't do a yichun room. They can't have the canopy if the groom has corona. So Rav Zilberstein got this question 2 days before the guy's wedding. The guy is testing positive for corona. Should they do the wedding? Should they push it off? Should they do the wedding? And basically what Zilberstein suggests, maybe they should do it with a shliach, an agent. Just do a ceremony, get 10 people, family members, call it a wedding, and he'll be in isolation, and then they'll be, you know, the husband and the fiancé and the groom, they'll be together a little later. I would never have thought this question ever happening, but Zilberstein addressed it. So what do you say? I want to hear, what do you think? Sala, you have a sheet, you have an idea.
Definitely not go there, because if it's a situation of Sakana, it's better not to spare it out. Now I don't know what other options there is.
Okay, so you're on the ball. Okay. Rav Zilberstein is very into, even though he's from B'nai Brak, and not everybody in B'nai Brak held this, very into you have to follow all the orders of the doctors. So that's correct. He said they cannot have the wedding together because of Sakana. They're not allowed. But he said maybe they could do a wedding via Zoom. A wedding where the husband and the wife are not even in the same room. They could do, and he says it's a Mishnah. We're allowed to do weddings via, who's going to give the ring? He'll ask his best friend. Can you give the ring to my fiance? Hare at mekudeshet, not li, kudeshet l'chaviri, to my friend. So he says, yes, it works. But he says, I don't recommend it. He says, he's very good at quoting a lot of people. He quotes from Chaim Palagi, Sardi. He says that they made a takana in Yerushalayim 200 years ago that people shouldn't get married through agents. For good reason. What happened was, in the days of the Ur Zeruah, this is more than 500 years ago, this is in Germany, 1300s, a guy got married through a letter. Halacha, he sent a letter to a family, I want to set up a shidduch. And they set up a shidduch, and the guy is a very smart person, and he got all the good recommendations, beautiful. And he said, Haram Mekudesh Ali, and he sent a ring in the mail, beautiful. And you can do that. So he got married in the mail. And then the kala, the fiancé, comes to meet the guy, and he has a patch over his eye, and she says, "No, what are you dressing up for Purim? What are you?" He says, "I'm blind. I have a patch over both my eyes. I just I can't see." So he said, "Why didn't you tell me that in the letter?" He said, "Because I thought you wouldn't marry me." So they sent to the Ur Zeruah. The wife wants out. Husband says, "I'm not giving a get." This is one of those very sad situations. The Ur Zeruah did say the marriage is null and void. But in any event, that's why the Rav Chaim Palagi was not into marriages through agencies, because it doesn't lead to good results. Anyway, that's where Rav Zilberstein came out. He doesn't recommend it. But yes, these funny sort of questions I wouldn't have guessed have even come up. Here, I'm going to share my screen on some of the other questions, and I'm going to move on to the second of the three personalities we're going to discuss. That was the Zoom marriage. Hold on, I went too fast. Yeah, Zoom Seder. So this was Rabbi Eliyahu Abigail. There was a Sephardi rabbi and a few others that had signed off on a Zoom Seder and leaving the computer on from before. And eight of them retracted later after it became very controversial. Four of them held their opinion. In a nutshell, if you look through, let's say, Rabbi Avadia's Shita or Rishon Zalman's especially, on talking into a microphone on Shabbat, it's not very obvious that there's so many problems with it. The main thing comes down to is Hashmat Kol, which in a very technical sense, for Ashkenaz is more of an issue, and for Sfardim, simply, it's probably not an issue. And even Hashmat Kol, Rosh Hashanah discusses. He's not actually lenient in speaking to a microphone on Shabbat, but if anybody's ever seen the quote-unquote kosher microphones for shuls, which not everybody holds that are even kosher, but some shuls that have them are relying on leniencies. So, it's not at all strange in a halachic sense, in a very technical, dry sense, to say, could you allow this if you follow all the cut and dry questions from some postgame? There would be room to discuss it. That doesn't preclude, though, the conclusion of most postgame was no way. Why no way? So let's just see here, Rav Zilberstein's way. Rav Zilberstein says, first he talked about recording. He said the father had corona, and he was in the hospital, and his children are at home. And he wanted to know if he didn't talk about Zoom in the first tshuva just because they're in B'nai Brak. So what they talk about? They talked about, could he do a recording on a cassette in the hospital of the Seder? And then his children will play it when they're at home during the Seder, and he'll be yotzei the mitzvah of he got to the bincha. So first he discusses for a few paragraphs, are you yotzei the mitzvah on recording? What do you think about that? I want to hear. Levy's, any ideas? If I were to record into an audio cassette something and someone listened to it later, do I get the mitzvah of teaching Torah? Is that the mitzvah of Higatza Levincha, of teaching the Seder? What do we think?
I think you have the mitzvah of teaching Torah when it's recorded. Like when you put it up on Wani Torah, you get a mitzvah when people are listening. But in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah of shofar, Apparently not, and you got Tal Avincha, that has to be present.
Wow, okay. Presence is different. I hear it's a good
point. And is it a problem you're saying I am just listening to pre-recorded?
Yeah. So after three paragraphs discussing the theoretical fun question about are you in the mitzvah, he thinks that Hagata L'mincha can be done even if not being present. He said, well, but basically, what's Hagata L'mincha about? It's about Mesorah, giving over an idea of our tradition. You can give that over even if you're not there. Now that's a question of when you educate, you have to be in person. How important is presence? But anyway, he thinks you're Yotze that. But he says, but you can't do it on Yontif because you have to judge, is it considered a problem of Hashma Kol? And then in a later volume, that was in the first volume of Corona Shilos, in his third volume, he says, I asked Rechayim Kanievsky, that's how many of his tshuvas end, I asked Rechayim Kanievsky, he said, no way. End of story. Rechayim Kanievsky didn't give a reason, as he generally doesn't answer any of the questions, more than Aser Mutter. If anybody's seen, like, shoot Rechayim Kanievsky, it's one word answers. Okay, next personality I want to discuss is Rav Usher Weiss. I'm going to get to Rav Schechter later. Any questions, though, on what I said so far? All right, so Rav Usher Weiss, if anybody's heard of him or not, I'm going to discuss that he's a personality that some people in America have had contact with a little bit more than Rabbi Zilberstein. Rabbi Zilberstein's from B'nai B'rak. Yeah, some people read some of his books because he's very fun, interesting questions and stories. However, very little contact with us because he didn't go to college. He has nothing to do with the modern world. And a different personality is Rav Usher Weiss. Rav Usher Weiss, on the one hand, comes from a Hasidic background, Borough Park, and he didn't learn English as his first language. He learned Yiddish. He didn't learn English. But he picked up English on his own. He didn't go to college. He learned English on his own, but he learned English from a dictionary. If anybody listens to his shiurim, he gives shiurim to Americans all the time. It's great. His English is very good, and he lives in Israel, and he's very, very close with many figures that people have heard of. Rav Herschel Schechter, he communicates on many things. His son, Shai Schechter, very often is in contact with Rav Usher Weiss, as well as he's the rabbi of Shari Sadek. He took over, many years before, but Eliezer Waldenberg, the Cis Eliezer, he answers medical shaylos all the time in Shari Sadek, and he is a very fun personality. He is also the teacher. He was in contact with one from Moroccans, Rav Avadia Yosef Toledano. Rav Avadia Yosef Toledano is Rav Avadia's grandson, named after his grandfather, Chacham Avadia. But he went and learned in the kollel of Rav Usher Weiss for a number of years. So if anybody's ever seen the tshuvas like of Rav Avadia, they have like 500, one of the biggest tshuvas, Dalit Lamed Dalit, 500, it's only, whatever, 10 columns or 15 columns, and he has over 500 makorah. And you look in Rav Usher Weiss's tshuvas, they are as sweet as could be, because he has very clear, organized thinking. And you look at the Rav Avadia Yosef Toledano, Svardi Sefer Mishpat Halacha, Mishpat Halacha, something like that, his Sefer, the first tshuva is about, let's say, websites on Shabbat, or you're allowed to leave a website, business website on Shabbat, and it's at least 50 pages long, so he has the length of Rav Avadia, but the clarity of Rav Usher Weiss. It's incredible to read his stuff. So anybody ever, and you can email him. Like, he's not very old, Rav Avadia Yosef Toledano, and I know somebody in YU that asks him questions. It's possible. Anyway, so Rav Usher Weiss, he gets questions, and I heard him discussing very, very intense medical questions. For example, like triage. Are you allowed to use a ventilator for two patients when corona is going up, when there are not enough ventilators? Are you allowed to take someone off a ventilator? Very, very sad and serious questions. And someone they know is probably not going to make it. So in medical triage, a very basic rule is you do what's most efficient and what's best. So if someone you know, the chance of making is very, very slim, you could take them off a ventilator and take this new patient who's in his 20s and caught corona and he needs a ventilator. Is much better chances than the guy in his 80s. So it's a tremendous tumult in the halachic world. Is that ever allowed? Schefter has written something about it, and a little bit he is edging on the side. There is such a possibility, not always, of halachic triage similar to medical triage. Rav Usher Weiss, he starts the shiur when he gives the shiur on this. I heard him. He says, there's an Ashkenazi pith, an enemy, animimas. I'm a despised poor person. But that's what the pith that the Shlita Sivur says on Yom Kippur. I'm a very poor individual. I have nothing to give. But Hashem, answer me, because I'm coming to you on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So he says the same thing. Look, Hashem, to answer these questions, b'kol nefesh, I can't do on my own. But to answer halakha questions, b'kol nefesh, I have to. I'm the rabbi of a hospital, and Shara Sadek asks these questions. And I'm coming not because of my individual merit, but because of the Sibur that's asking me. So let me just give an example. And he's very much not into triage. He's a very different approach. Almost like many issues, Rav Schefter will pit in one direction. Rav Usher Weiss is very classically different. Very much Rav Zilberstein, in terms of like halachic derech, is just like, is not very, it's very hard to pin down. It's not very intellectual in the emotional sense, nor is it precedent oriented. He'll bring tens of makoros like Rav Avadya Yosef either. Rav Zilberstein has one word, bottom line answers, but fun stories. Rav Usher Weiss is much more classic like Rav Avadya. You have to be in the sources. He's not so into svara. Rav Schefter is so into svara, it's incredible. We'll get to him soon. So he talks about that in 200 years before Rizal Salanter, when there was cholera going around, so he told people on fast days you should eat, because if anybody gets sick, then you should be able to eat. So somebody said, and some rabbanim are saying that you're allowed to do this for the minor fast days, and some people even saying for Tisha B'Av. What do you think? Outside, before we see, is that an approach? Sort of. Now, there's at least 10 categories. I saw Rabbi Berkowitz from Ish.com wrote up 10 halachas for Tisha B'Av about this particular question. But let's make the categories like this: there are people that have no symptoms and not tested positive, people that have symptoms but never tested, and people that are tested positive and have symptoms. Should they eat on Tisha B'Av? What do we think? Before I get to Rav Asher Weiss's answer and Rav Schefter's answer, just to contrast, what do we think?
Depends on the age of the person.
Okay.
If you're older and you potentially could get corona, you shouldn't fast.
Even if they're not testing and no symptoms.
But their potential, if they would get it, they could get very sick because they're old, and the fast already would make them sicker.
Okay.
Fasting on Tisha B'Av, and then the next day if you start getting symptoms, the fast puts you in a worse state.
Okay. Any thoughts from the levies? All right, from Sal.
Do you know where I come from?
I know.
Okay. No, perhaps it depends on your environment. If there's a lot of COVID going around in your environment, then you're more of a second, huh? Like in Texas, if I was in Florida, I'm not sure that the elderly in Florida should fast, maybe.
Okay.
They're getting 1,000 cases a day.
So Hashem Yishmor. So Rav Schefter's approach, now there's not a sock on Tisha B'Av, but his approach is throughout COVID, throughout his 45 or so tshuvas, 46, he very much assumes this type of assumption that we're all under pressure. We have to deal with the situation, and it's stressful, and we have kulas, and we're going to rely on those opinions, and we're going to push the bar a little bit when it makes sense to. So with music during 3 weeks, he says for someone who is getting themselves out of stress, they could do that. For dishwashers on Pesach, he said that was his first tshuva. You're allowed to kasher your dishwasher for Pesach so you don't have to clean dishes. You might be thinking, if I'm healthy and I'm at home and I could wash my dishes in the sink or I could use a dishwasher, what's the Shiloh of Corona? But Rushafter has. Like, this approach is, we're under pressure, so if we're going to rely on a leniency, let's rely on a leniency. And it's coming from a lot of Yerushalayim, but that's a general approach. Now, when it comes to fast days, it's not as easy, yes. I don't think he would come and say anybody with no symptoms and never tested would not fast. Maybe some Rabbanim would, some others. I'm not saying that's not an opinion, but I don't think Rosh Hashanah would take it quite that far. But someone with symptoms, I think he would definitely say, even never tested, even the, you know, in a younger age, I think he would be able to potentially say, don't fast. Every person could ask their Shiloh, but I think that would be his opinion. And Rav Asher Weiss has a whole different approach. And I'll give another example, just because I'm ending my time. What do you say with this? Sal Levy, I want to hear what you think. Bar Mitzvah, during Corona, that got pushed off, unfortunately. So they asked Rav Schachter, let's say the Bar Mitzvah boy prepared, not your case, but let's say they prepared Parsha, they were going to do Parsha, whatever, Vayikra, and they knew the Parsha, and then there's no shul, they can't get a Sefer Torah, they can't get a minyan. Now they get, finally, weeks and weeks later, comes Parsha Naso, the shuls are open, Parsha Bamidbar. Should the boy who prepared for 2 years, the Kriyat Torah and the Haftorah, what should he do? Is he allowed to do Parsha Vayikra? But this week is not Parsha Vayikra. What do you say? Sal, what do you think? Okay, you don't have
to. He's
on mute. It's okay. If you don't have an opinion, it's fine. You could pay, phone a friend.
You can get as many family members as you can to not spread the virus.
Hashem, you have such a good family. Baruch Hashem. What would you say, though? Let's say, suppose, everybody else. What happens, unfortunately? They can't. They have 2 people in the family, small house, and no neighbors coming. Can't do it. They're stuck. They missed it. And it's sad. So what do you say now? Any thought? So Schachter wrote a tshuva on this. He didn't write actually a tshuva, sorry, oral psak. He said that it's allowed to do as the maftir. You have to do the regular week parsha, but he said, clever idea. Maftir doesn't actually count as an aliyah. We do 7 aliyahs. 7 aliyahs is all you need. The maftir doesn't count. Do the bar mitzvah parsha, take out 2 sefer Torah. Do this week's parsha first, 7 aliyahs. Maftir will be bar mitzvah parsha. And he says, what about haftorah? The boy prepared the haftorah. Could he do it? He said, yes. But that's not this week's parsha. He said, haftorah always follows the maftir. It doesn't need to follow this week's parsha. It's a minhag. How we do haftorah, which haftorah we choose. You could choose the haftorah that he likes. And for that, I'll say a nice story. Once upon a time, Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked the following question. There was a boy who had some disability, who had learning disorder. He couldn't learn. Whatever, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but he was not going to regular school and having an easy time. And he was trying to prepare for his bar mitzvah, so his father taught him very, very little, because he hardly could do anything. But he told him to read the words from the Haftorah. Okay, he was not able to do the regular learning of the Parsha, but he wasn't going to be able to do that. He'd be too embarrassed, not possible. What he was going to do was the Haftorah. Okay. And lo and behold, the bar mitzvah is coming this week, and they call Rosh Shlomo Zalman. The father says, I made a mistake. I looked at the calendar, and the Haftorah I taught my son for 3 years now, and it's all he's doing is the Haftorah, is the wrong week. I picked the wrong week. Nothing to do with Corona. This was 30 years ago. Rosh Shlomo Zalman said, for that, for Kavod HaBriyot, you can have the wrong Haftorah. The boy will get up, he'll read the Haftorah. It's the wrong one, it's okay. Anyway, so what do you say? Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva on this exact question. He's writing to a shul in Edison, New Jersey. The rabbi, Rabbi Lubin, was asking, what do you say about that? He asked Rav Asher Weiss. And Rav Asher Weiss says, I love Rav Schachter, and I love his answer. He said, but I looked high and low, and this is like a Ravaji type of style. He said, and he quotes about 5 different poskim on the topic. He says, I looked high and low, and Rishonim, Achronim, Gemaras. There's nobody who says you can do it like Rav Schachter. But he says, there's nobody who says you can't. He says, but look, my hands are tied. I go with precedent. Rav Schachter has a smart, maybe he's right. Maybe in 20 years from now, we're going to dig up another Yerushalmi Kachim from the Riaz, from the Italy, and the stuff in the walls in the Vatican. Or, like, they actually did find some things, like the Rokeach's Yerushalmi on Kachim. But maybe we'll find it. One day we'll see that Reshefter's right. But until then, I can't paskin based on a svara, based on his logic. That's classic. So I'm going to share my screen to show that. But that's classic argument between Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Schachter. Now, you have to have some shoulders to do that. Okay, the fast day, he's also into precedent. Rav Asher Weiss is not interested in being lenient on the fast days, other than you have to go with precedent. You know, if the person's sick, so then fine. And he has a strange line, but he basically said it's every person is promoting the phrase, you know, the more makel the person, ashrei lo, ashrei chelko, call makel mechaver, or is a meshubach, you know, greater is the person that's able to be lenient. He said, it's lesari, it's to my sadness. He's pained by the fact that it's just, to some people, if there's a halachic will, whatever, then there's a halachic way. That's totally not true, and he goes very much back to precedent, and he's not into kulas that don't have sources. Rav Asher, so talking about the bar mitzvah was in this page. Okay, I'm not going to get into this, just to put it out there. He has very beautiful truvas with lots of sources on, this is a very weighty question, about paying people. What do you do about if you had to cancel a wedding, or you had to cancel anything, you had to cancel your trip to Israel and you lost the tickets? Do you get your money back, do you not, for education? Do you have to pay the school full price or the Zoom price? They're giving you Zoom education, you just pay them the Zoom price. All right, so anyway, like Rav Schachter basically comes out, it's a suffix. There's a machluk supposed to come about this, the Sma and the Rama, and our hands are tied, maybe you should make a pshara. But midin stuck, Rav Schachter said you should give the yeshivas. Rav Asher Weiss says, and he has a long tshuva, a lot of sources, you can't do that. It's not fair to start saying suffix the mamo and everybody's going to get off the hook. Because then the parents that did pay already in advance don't have to pay, do have to pay, and not going to get the money back. The parents that didn't pay don't have to pay. And then, and he says, a funny thing could come out. He says, the principal could, this would be terribly awful, but horrible, but he can also take two ends of the stick. On the one hand, he'll charge the parents already paid, he won't give them back any money, and he'll say to the teachers, I don't need to pay you, because you didn't do the full job, and the contract said you need to pay the job. So then the principal, but whoever is in charge of the school is going to steal all the money. He said, that would be a shanda, that would be terrible, that would be wrong to do. He says, obviously you can't just pass it based on suffix. You have to come up with, he says you have to make a compromise 50%. Anyway, this is Rav Schachter. He's the only one of the poskim that I really discussed that went to college, and he actually even has a master's degree. He is a poskim at the OU, the dishwasher tshuva. Oh, last tshuva I really want to get to is this fun one. It's not translated into English. Most of his tshuvas, as you can see in that shared screen, is actually written in English. Rav Asher Weiss, not in English. Rav Zilberstein, not in English. Last question, I'm going to finish on this in 1 minute. He says, could you order chametz on Pesach to deliver them after Pesach? And somebody asked me this, actually, Lamaisa, because they were worried. They weren't leaving their house at all. A couple was not leaving their house, and they said, we don't want to eat chametz. We don't eat Pesach food for another week after Pesach until we can get a delivery, because by the time we order the food, until they deliver it, it takes a week. So are we allowed to order the food, chametz, and buy chametz on Pesach? Incredible tshuva. Rav Schachter has to be lenient on that. Incredible tshuva. But not everybody is as quick to be lenient as he is. Anyway, thank you for joining. I want to just end with this message that we're entering now into Tisha B'Av season. And I'll ask, or at least on the email, what people want to do for next week. But the Meraglim, and what caused the whole sin, was they put the pale eye, they put their mouth before their eyes. And when it comes to halacha, that's a very big travesty, a big trouble that could happen, is if a person puts their heart in one direction, they decide this is going to be right, and then they look with their eyes what they're looking for to make it fit into that picture. This week is Shabbat Chazon, and the Rosh Hashanah Kohen says, we call it Shabbat Chazon because it's about sight. We have to fix our eyesight. What we look at should be filtered by pure intent, and based on what we see, then make a correct decision, not decide before we see things. And that applies to halacha, and applies to everything in life, and applies to how you judge other people in many lessons. That's Shabbat Chazon, the way we see. You should correct the way we see. All right, thank you so much. Any questions? Yes.
Yeah. without the fast? Yes. What was the answer about the fast?
The fast. So my approach, this is the one that I saw from Rabbi Berkowitz, is that someone who has symptoms definitely does not have to fast. The person that doesn't have any symptoms and didn't test positive, they should fast. And they should stay inside and be careful, not even to go to a minyan if that's going to be too difficult for them. The kino is certainly on Zoom. But I'm not the post-it for everybody here. I'm not answering, you know, everybody should, you know, ask their questions, whoever they usually ask. But I don't think Rosh Chapter is generally very lenient with corona questions I've tried presenting, but does it not on everything. It's not everything. Okay.
Thank you very much. It was very
thought-provoking. Thank you.
Put a lot of effort into it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sammy. Thank you so much. All right, bye, everyone. Have a Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Anybody
join me this Shabbos
next week, or I'm going to ask him, you know, Isaac.
Oh, whatever you want.
Do you want me to do like a topic of Tisha B'Av, or should I just skip it next week?
Maybe something that pertains to the.
Okay.
Maybe something that pertains to the day or whatever.
I could do it then, or I could skip.